Good evening. Biden and Sanders cancel rallies in Cleveland as the U.S. death toll from coronavirus rises to 29. Governor Cuomo deploys the National Guard in New Rochelle, and the Bernie bros strike at a Biden rally in Michigan.
It's not a Trump rally. Let him go. Let him go. Let him go. The Bernie bros are here. Let him go.
And with these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. Senator Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden both canceled rallies in Michigan today as voters there and in the five other so-called mini Tuesday states are casting ballots. According to a Sanders campaign spokesperson, the cancellation came out of concern for public health and safety. At an earlier interview, Sanders said his campaign always checks the state health officials before holding a rally.
We do not hold a rally without first conferring with local public health officials. But your question obviously goes a lot more to a political rally than I may have. It goes to basketball games, it goes to theater events all across this country. And that is an issue, I think, that every organization, every sports team is going to have to look at. So to answer your very good question, it is an issue that we think about a whole lot. We do not go forward without consultation with local public health officials.
And just a correction, that is, of course, Cleveland, Ohio, where those rallies were canceled. And, of course, Ohio is not one of the states that is currently having a Democratic primary. The main state is Michigan. Meanwhile, former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democrats' current front runner, appeared in Detroit with former contenders for the Democratic nomination, Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. But a group Biden calls the Bernie Bros, fanatic supporters of Sanders' campaign, stole the show.
It's not a Trump rally. Let him go. Let him go. Let him go. The Bernie bros are here. Let him go.
And in more coronavirus news, two more people have died in King County in Washington, bringing the county total to 22 from the coronavirus. Both victims were in their 80s. A senior care facility called Life Care Center is where 19 of the deaths have occurred. 27 people in the U.S. have died in total. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and state and local health agencies report at least 849 cases of coronavirus in the U.S. According to the CDC, there are 70 cases from repatriated citizens from Wuhan, China, and the Diamond Princess and Grand Princess cruise ships. Meanwhile, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz said that he tested negative for coronavirus. Gaetz had tweeted he was in contact with an individual at the Conservative Political Action Conference who had tested positive for the virus. The Florida Republican wore a gas mask on March 4th while voting on a multi-billion dollar bill to combat the virus. Shortly afterwards, it was learned one of his constituents had died of the virus. An attending physician for the Congress suggested this morning that representatives forego handshakes and touching and instead use the sign made famous on the TV show Star Trek. It consists of holding the hand vertically and separating the middle and ring fingers while using the greeting, "Live long and prosper." North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows, who is named as the incoming White House Chief of Staff, and six members of Congress have isolated themselves after coming in contact with people exposed to the virus. In New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo has ordered schools, temples, churches, and other large gathering places in much of New Rochelle closed. New York is trying to stop the spread of one of the country's worst coronavirus clusters by deploying the National Guard to help with cleaning streets and public places. The governor spoke earlier today.
New Rochelle is a significant hotspot, even if you look at the overall map of the United States. So we will be talking about school closings in that area. We have closed the schools now. The question will be duration, but we could be talking weeks. Dr. Zucker has a discussion with the CDC and the FDA later on about how long to keep those schools closed, but I think at this point it's fair to say we're talking about a number of weeks. For all schools, we're going to set a policy that if a student tests positive in a school, that school is closed for an initial 24-hour period so that we can do an assessment of the situation and the facts and then make a determination going forward, given the facts in that particular school district. And the Department of Health is going to be doing a joint regulation with SED on that. Paid sick leave, quarantine, we'll be sending up a bill today. As you know, I proposed paid sick leave, which before any of this coronavirus even began, but it's even more important now. I think it's especially important that if government is ordering a quarantine, even a voluntary quarantine, that places a personal hardship on a person, that person should get paid. And we're going to be sending up a bill to the legislature. I'm going to speak to the legislative leaders about that today because we have a significant number of people now on quarantine. And I don't want to add to the burden that we're creating. And I think the business community, it's in their interest that people actually stay home and stop the spread. So I feel good about that law. I just want to get it passed. I want to reiterate a point that we have made before. The people at risk here are senior citizens, people with a compromised immune system, people with an underlying illness. But they should take it seriously. And for people in that category, they should adjust their interactions, so-called social distancing. I had this conversation with my mother. I said, look, you know, you want to be careful. This is not the time to be going to large gatherings. So use your discretion. Use your intelligence. It's not the time to be getting on a long plane flight. You know, the fear and the hysteria is outpacing the reality of this situation. But the reality of the situation is people in that target group should be careful, right? So let's be realistic on the overall hysteria and hype that we're now living through. But the reality is for that vulnerable population, they should be taking precautions.
Apart from those who are under quarantine, residents and visitors to the community of 79,000 will be able to come and go freely with no checkpoints set up and businesses can remain open. In related news, Cuomo announced Monday the state had begun producing its own line of hand sanitizer known as New York State Clean. The state will distribute the products to schools, local governments, prisons, and other public entities free of charge. The low price of making the sanitizer in-house allows the state to make the offer, but it's the way the state is containing its costs that has some lawmakers and advocacy groups alarmed by paying prisoners at least as little as 16 cents an hour to make it. The hand sanitizer is being produced at the Great Meadow Correctional Facility, a maximum security prison in Comstock, Washington County. It will only be distributed for free to public entities and coronavirus hotspots. It will not be offered by sale, and that's according to Cuomo's office. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. The United States is one of the only rich countries not requiring employers to give their workers paid time off when they're sick. Citing the coronavirus outbreak, Democrats in Congress are trying to pass a new version of a sick leave bill that has been stalled in Congress since 2004. Republicans have generally not supported a paid sick leave mandate, but on Monday night, President Trump said he would be meeting with congressional leaders to discuss relief for workers. Officials said the ideas include a payroll tax cut, small business loans, and legislation intended to protect hourly wage earners who may have to miss work because of the spread of the virus. New York City and Westchester County are among 11 states and 25 localities that have passed paid sick leave laws. In New York, paid sick leave is 40 hours or 5 days a year. The co-founder of A Better Balance is Sherry Lewent. Her group was part of a protest last week targeting the Chipotle fast food chain, which has come under fire for not honoring their sick leave commitment to employees. Lewent says sick leave is a necessary entitlement anytime, but especially during a health emergency.
have a paid sick days law. We fought very hard to get that law in 2013, and it was improved in 2014 by the mayor. And people are entitled to 5 days, 40 hours of paid sick time. So no one should, at least for that period of time, worry about their paycheck. That is something that all New Yorkers who work pretty much are entitled to. A lot of people don't realize that or don't know that. There are also many places of business that give you even more time. In the paid sick time law that we passed, because we passed it around the time of the swine flu epidemic, H1N1, there is a provision that you can use your sick leave if your child's school is closed or if your place of business is closed. So even if you yourself are not sick, but there's a public health emergency and in order to close those places, you're entitled to use your sick leave. It's important for people to know that because you can't expect people to sacrifice even a paycheck for one day, particularly for people who live paycheck to paycheck, if their symptoms are mild or they feel like they can go to work, but it may not be the best thing for them to do.
Yeah. Why was Chipotle chosen as the place for the protest?
This is a right in New York City. It's a right in 11 states and about 25 localities have these laws. It is, but there's always a problem with employers who don't follow the law, and there have been problems at Chipotle and for people who are trying to access their paid sick time. And obviously, for all of us, in terms of public health, places like Chipotle, fast food restaurants, retail, it's very, very important that employers in those industries take this very seriously and make sure they follow the law when it comes to paid sick time.
Right. And how does it work, actually? And how do they approach their boss to collect it?
It's really great that you said that. Most people who have paid sick time in their employment can't believe how many people, about 32 million in the United States, don't have a single day of paid sick time. And so we have been fighting to get these laws passed. And over the last 10 to 12 years, we've gotten a lot of them passed in states and localities. There's a hearing next week in Washington on a federal proposal to require paid sick time for all workers in the United States. And we would really love to see that happen. There's also a proposal now that was just dropped yesterday in the United States Senate to pass a paid sick days bill that would also have some additional time if there's a public health emergency. As a basic employment right, just like minimum wage, everybody should have paid sick time.
What happens if we have to stay, like some of these folks have been in there being held for weeks now in cruise ships? Yesterday it was reported there's 4,000 people already in New York State who are in isolation.
That is a problem and that is an issue. And I should say, we're very proud of the law in New York City because we worked really hard to pass it. It didn't go into effect till 2014, but it is a New York City law and we also passed one in Westchester. But further upstate, there are no protections. And the governor has actually included in his budget a proposal to require paid sick days for the entire state, and we're working with him on that, and we're hoping that that will pass. 40 hours or 5 days is not sufficient. In an emergency like this, there should be some vehicle for getting some kind of support to workers that have to be out for longer.
Can you be fired, actually, even if you're required not to go to work?
You can't be fired for those 40 hours. There is job protection for those 40 hours. There's job protection in the governor's proposal. But above that, I think if you're actually sick, we have paid family leave so you can take care of anybody who's sick in your household and temporary disability insurance as well. So for a longer term, you could apply for those benefits. But that's a lot more difficult and a lot more complicated.
Sherry Lawant is co-founder of A Better Balance. And the online magazine Sludge points out that Democrats are looking ahead to the second nominating ballot at the July Democratic National Convention. If there are not enough votes to make one candidate the nominee, the party's superdelegates will be allowed to cast votes. Among the superdelegates are scores of corporate lobbyists and consultants, including many of the 75 at-large DNC members who are not individually elected. They're put forward as a slate by DNC Chair Tom Perez, who has been accused of undermining support for Bernie Sanders. David Moore wrote the article, Corporate Lobbyists Control the Rules at the DNC, for Sludge.
447 voting DNC members make up the majority of around 771 superdelegates who will be voting at the national convention in Milwaukee in July. The remainder of the superdelegates, some ballpark 300, the majority are elected Democrats and mostly members of Congress, and including some other high party officials. Our investigation at Sludge found that far more members of top committees on the DNC have ties to presidential campaigns or corporate consulting and lobbying positions than was previously anticipated. The 47-member DNC Executive Committee contains 17 members with conflicts of interest, according to our analysis, and the 32-member Rules and Bylaws Committee contains 20 individuals with conflicts of interest. So that's 2 of 3. That's far more than the majority on the Rules and Bylaws Committee that's responsible for overseeing the charter. A few of the notable names that are examples of who of the party leaders who lead the work of these committees. On the Executive Committee, DNC member Tonio Burgos is a prominent New York and New Jersey corporate lobbyist close to Governor Cuomo's political career and family, who received over $1 million for lobbying for a fracked gas pipeline called the Williams Pipeline that would put fossil fuels under New York Harbor. Minyan Moore is a principal at the prominent lobbying firm Dewey Square Group, where she leads local affairs strategies. In addition, Dewey Square Group's past clients included the healthcare insurance industry during the early Obamacare years and placed fake letters to the editor in local newspapers in order to be able to undermine key changes to Medicare and Medicaid in the Obama years. On the Rules Committee, the longtime co-chair is James Roosevelt III, the grandson of FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt, who has been a recent board member of a major health insurers trade group that is part of leading the effort, the dark money effort, to combat single-payer Medicare for all in the United States. And Harold Ickes is a prominent corporate lobbyist whose clients have included Verizon, United Airlines, JP Morgan Chase, and dozens of others. And Harold Ickes is a great example of an at-large DNC member who was appointed to the Rules Committee specifically by Tom Perez in an October 2017 purge of progressive members.
Are these folks Biden supporters or Bernie Sanders supporters?
In October 2017, Tom Perez, after he had solidified his narrow win as election of chair and defeated then Representative Keith Ellison in the vote for DNC chair early in 2017, he pushed out many previous supporters of the Bernie Sanders 2016 presidential bid and those who had supported Keith Ellison's bid for chair. And in fact, our investigation surfaced that on the Rules Committee, there is one attorney from Michigan who's sitting on the active Rules Committee who is a Biden bundler, who has co-hosted fundraisers for the Biden campaign. In addition, we had previously found campaign strategists for the Bloomberg and the Buttigieg campaign who had sat on the Rules Committees. There's no public disclosure of their minutes or agendas or their detailed roll call votes.
Last question, is the fix in?
The DNC is continuing to frustrate and reject efforts for independent oversight of how the party spends its money and how the rules are made. So at the DNC convention this summer, it's likely that there's a strong majority among superdelegates and especially among the DNC members that we've been investigating on Sludge, who are part of the party establishment and who have clients in the healthcare and fossil fuel industries who want to see business as usual continued, and that so that policies such as single-payer Medicare for all or a Green New Deal that are popular with the grassroots of the party are not heard on an equal playing field by democratically elected DNC members.
And David Moore is a writer for the online magazine Sludge. Hundreds of residents of the small farming community of Butler, New York, turned out to protest plans by two companies to build a facility for composting sewage sludge for New York City. The companies, Syracuse Sand and Gravel and Tully Environmental, presented their plan in front of a packed audience at the town of Butler board meeting Monday night. Resident Tom Mettler spoke with WBAI today.
It's a composting facility, and what they want to do, they want to truck 300 to 350 tons of sewer sludge, human waste, to this proposed site and compost it.
What happens when they compost it?
They're saying that our farmers could use it as fertilizer on our fields.
Are people opposed to it? What's happening?
We had a board meeting last night, and there were hundreds there. There were demonstrators, all peaceful demonstrations. The building itself was packed, probably 170 or 80 people in the building. They had all in there they could get. There were probably a couple hundred people outside yet that couldn't get in. We have a grassroots movement here, and I believe that it's going to take grassroots people to stop this, but I think we can.
And what's the problem besides maybe the optics of trucking in a big city's dirt and dumping it in a hole in the countryside? Is there a problem with this beyond that?
I'm totally opposed, and it wouldn't matter if it was taken care of our own within this county. I would be opposed to the site location because there is the potential to contaminate a huge water supply. We have a water supply in the town of Butler that feeds the village of Wolcott. It can potentially feed parts of another neighboring county. I've worked in wastewater for 24 years. The taxpayers from the village of Wolcott, town of Huron, and the town of Wolcott have spent millions of dollars trying to protect the Port Bay watershed. Now, Tully's proposing putting the site in up the road, just maybe 2.5-3 miles from the village of Wolcott. They could, even if it was just human air, if they contaminated not just aquifer, but the water supply, it could blow all the millions that the taxpayers have already spent right out of the water. You know, it'd be like flushing it down the toilet.
Very good. Who is this board? Tell us just a minute to go on the board. Who is the board and what's so problematic?
Well, the board in the town of Butler represent the people in the town of Butler. Now, like I told them at last night's meeting, we the people are opposed to this. We let them know that we were against it. The supervisor himself told me, I met with him, that 39 years ago, the people elected him because they didn't want change and they wanted to see Butler continue to be the way it is, an agricultural community. I said, 39 years later, we the people right here in this room are telling you that we do not want Tully Environmental here. We do not want downstate sludge here because this community and surrounding counties, we cannot handle the amount of waste they want to bring here, human waste. The waste is full of contaminants, and only God knows what chemicals that go down the pipe at a wastewater treatment plant, hospital waste, there's a number of things. I did tell the board if they didn't want to tell Tully no thank you, I'd do it for them.
Right.
But I got no response. Other than a big applause from the audience. And, you know, I want to make this clear. It's not about the people from New York City because there's great people there, I'm sure. It's just we have to figure out solutions to take care of our own. One of my questions to Tully, and they've admitted it, the cost alone is going to be huge in trucking. Why not come up with a facility closer and save the cost and just come up with a solution that's good for everybody?
Tom Mettler is a resident in the town of Butler, New York. And in late breaking news, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases says as a country, we can't be doing what we were doing a few months ago. He's followed by Dr. Deborah Binks of the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinators.
That it doesn't matter if you're in a state that has no cases or one case, you have to start taking seriously what you can do now that if and when the infections will come, and they will come, sorry to say, sad to say, they will. But when you're dealing with an infectious disease, you know, we always have that metaphor that people talk about, that Wayne Gretzky, you know, he doesn't go where the puck is, he's going where the puck is going to be. Well, we want to be where the infection is going to be, as well as where it is. So what we have here, if you could see that here, it's here, is that if you go to coronavirus.gov, remember when Dr. Birx yesterday mentioned some of the things that we put together. These are really simple. Keeping the workplace safe, keeping the home safe, keeping the schools safe, and keeping commercial establishments safe. This should be universal for the country. Everyone should be doing that, whether you live in a zone that has community spread or not. When you have community spread, you're obviously going to ratchet up the kinds of mitigations that you have. But at a minimum, this is the minimum that we should be doing. So everybody should say, all hands on deck, this is what we need to do. So I'll stop there, and later I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Dr. Crouch.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, and thank you, Dr. Fauci, for that clarity. We continue to monitor the situation across the country and across the globe, and we're very fortunate between Dr. Fauci and I, we have long-term contacts out there in many of these countries that are experiencing current outbreaks. We continue to review all the scientific literature to look for insights and to really determine who's at the greatest risk. And that's why we've talked to you about people with immunodeficiencies at any age, people with medical conditions, and the elderly. And how important it is for all of us to take these precautions in the household to protect others. Because we have circulating flu and other respiratory diseases at this time. We all have to act like all of those diseases, any respiratory disease, can be transmitted to others. And as we said yesterday, we're hoping that decreases all the respiratory disease we're experiencing. Finally, we got new reports out of China who had 9 pregnant women during an acute COVID infection, and all 9 were infected. Both, and they delivered while they were infected, and all 9 babies were healthy, and the mothers were healthy. So we continue to look for data like that to be reassuring to the American public, at the same time ensuring that every single person is participating in this response to this virus and taking those precautions that we should be taking every day. If we start doing this today, we will be ready next year for any of our respiratory diseases, because I think we'll be able to show that these simple household, simple work, simple school, simple business approaches across the country can change all of our respiratory diseases. So we thank you for getting the message out. We thank you for the participating and ensuring in your households and in households around America that we're protecting all of those who need us.
And that's some of the news for Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. The news is produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.